only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, and I'm just conversing with Gary, with Siaka, and he was asking me if I was coming down, because I'd planned to be in New York Thursday, Friday, but I can't go now. My cardiologist, Capital Cardiology, moved up an appointment and to Friday, and since we're leaving next week, and I'll be gone for 3 weeks, I tried to, tried to move it around. No, can't do it then. No. So I'm sort of hamstrung now. I guess for now we're going to, unless I can try again today and see if they can't come up with something. So I don't know if I'm going down right now. As of right this minute, it's a no. But we'll see. I could go Saturday for the race day, but I was looking forward to broadcasting, actually, for a couple of days. So anyway, Gary was telling me, and like I told Mig, we were all excited to go, on a few dining expeditions. Right now, we're gonna go on a legal expedition because Alan Foreman joins us, and which is always fun.
Good morning.
What's more fun than what? Legal exploratories?
Well, what territory are you taking me to today?
I've got several. Listen, racing jurisprudence. This is like years ago, right? Didn't the Daily Racing Forum and the Telegraph? They had the police blotter, right? people love that.
Just the facts, man.
Exactly right. Well, we are going to talk about the match series, which we didn't get a chance to do, 2 weeks ago or so. Literally after you got off the phone, a half an hour later, there was a press release. So we'll talk about the match series. But I wanted to address two things, Alan, that ripped from today's headlines, as we so often do. Yesterday, actually, I think it started on Sunday, that the word came out that the KHRC, when they had called Bob Baffert to inform him of the betamethasone positive, that they had taped the conversation. From a legal, strictly a legal debate discussion, Alan, explain the legalities of these one-party and two-party agreements, because there's lots of back and forth on the internet about it. Explain to people what the intricacies are of this.
Well, the answer is it's a state law question, and the state law question is, and I'm not a Kentucky lawyer, the question is, are recordings of phone conversations, whether it's a government entity, whether it's between individuals or otherwise, are permitted to be recorded? And if so, do you have to notify the person with whom you are speaking and you are recording? Do you need to advise them that the conversation is being recorded? I have a hard time believing the Kentucky Racing Commission would record conversations without knowing what the law permits. I don't know much more beyond that. I didn't see this story, so I'm kind of answering this cold. But I do know the law is pretty clear that it's a state law question as to what is permitted and what is not permitted.
Well, it's a story that came out of the LA Times, and Clark Brewster actually was fairly matter of fact about it. And to some degree, I mean, when you see the what's been the call hasn't been released, but the transcript have been bandied about a little bit, and it's actually very interesting. I'll let you seek it out and go from there, but
you know, this case just has more twists and turns than a plate of spaghetti. And it's just every day there seems to be some new nuance to the manner in which it's proceeding. Although I think that, you know, in the previous conversations I've had with you about this case, I've been fairly spot on as to what I think was going to happen. And, you know, I had telegraphed to you, I think we talked a couple weeks ago, two, 3 weeks ago, with Judge Wingate's ruling where I thought the case was headed, and it seems to be going in that direction.
I just realized there's a third legal topic to discuss, I'll throw that one in after we cover off number two, and this one involves Naira and Wayne Potts, who just is finding himself in headlines on a regular basis. The New York Gaming Commission handed him a 45-day suspension on Sunday based on a product in the tack room that may or may not be innocuous. And I was curious how you viewed this topic and this story.
Excuse me. Well, they are clamping down. You know, this is New York, so you know you're dealing with not only Naira, you're dealing with Dr. Scott Palmer, who's I think the top equine medical director in the country, authorities are becoming much more vigorous in what's going to be permitted in barns and tack rooms than previously have been permitted. And I think when the new authority, you know, takes control on July 1, you'll see a much more vigorous approach to the presence of supplements that are bought on the internet, substances that are being administered to horses, the contents of which, you know, the trainer may not know. I spent a lot of time working with the show horse industry in this country, and they have very clear admonishments about the use of supplements and substances, the contents which are unknown, or when there is a representation from a manufacturer that it will not test, is not testable or otherwise. So this is supposedly an anti-bleeder medication. I don't know much about it. I'm not surprised that these kinds of substances are going to start showing up in barns because of the restrictions on the use of Lasix that are coming. And I suspect we'll see more of this as trainers wrestle with horses that bleed. But, with Wayne Potts, you know, they're watching him. His barn was what we call shaken down. They found this substance. I don't know why it's being administered to a horse. It does apparently not appear to be innocuous, and it's not approved by the FDA, and the rules are very clear about that. And the Gaming Commission came down very hard on them, and I think it's a message to other trainers about the supplements and substances that you have in your barns and the possibility that they could be problematic if regulators get a hold of them.
And you know, for those that didn't see, Bill Finley wrote the story on Sunday in TDN, and a product called Equiflow, and an EIPH treatment, and the material from the manufacturer calls it an investigational stem cell derived concentrated protein serum, and frankly, that terminology kind of harkens back to, you know, some of the Medivet, very similar, at least in conceptually, not equating it, you know, directly, but it has that sound to it, and so it's a message, Alan, right? I mean, to everybody,
yeah,
that
I mean,
you can't be. Even testing things out, you know, just pell mell.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what. I guess I saw the explanation that Wayne gave, but man, there's a red flag written all over that, and I just, it doesn't surprise me. And look, there are so many products that are available on the internet that purport to do various things to horses and that are either not in violation of racing, or there's at least the representation that they're not in violation of racing rules, or they're not testable. And, you know, you just have to exercise such caution because they can only lead to problems. And, you know, he's using a product on a horse, the efficacy of which is completely unknown. It's just a representation from the manufacturer of what it's trying to do. We all know that at some point in the future, stem cell research is going to become very valuable, I think, in the equine industry, but it's going to be done under controlled studies with controlled products that either are approved or not approved. And it's been the position of the industry for quite some time that you should not be administering substances that are not approved for use in horses by the FDA. And when those circumstances happen and the trainer gets caught, there's usually a significant penalty.
The third topic that I did not include actually in my rundown with you before we talk about the match series, closing out the week, the first part of what will be some other court decisions. Alan, your thoughts on this first rejection from the Texas court of the HBPA's suit challenging HISA?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of discussion by a number of legal experts as to what they thought might happen. But I go back to February 3 years ago. I was right after the hearing that was held in Washington regarding the Horse Racing Integrity Act. And that was following the crisis at Santa Anita. You had the Service Navarro situation, and things were really building up in terms of the industry's difficulties. And there was a sense that the Horse Racing Integrity Act was going to move forward, and that to get industry buy-in, the best way to achieve that would be to expand the Horse Racing Integrity Act to include a safety program, because horses were dying on the racetrack, and they weren't dying on the racetrack because of illegal drug use. Or, as you know, the fatalities are multifactorial. A group of industry leaders met in Washington after that hearing, and they met with attorneys, and they met with USADA to talk about what the issues were that were preventing the act from going forward in Congress and getting more industry support. And there was discussion with attorneys about setting up a FINRA type arrangement. The financial industry is regulated under a scheme that is very similar. It was actually the model for the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act and the authority. And the issues of constitutionality, there were a number of lawyers there, and we were dealing with experts in Washington on what the constitutional issues were and how to address those issues to ensure compliance and passing what we call constitutional muster. And we were well satisfied. You know, whether you were a strong supporter of HISA, our group was kind of taking the middle ground that we're going to work with you. You know, we weren't out there specifically advocating for it as other groups were, but we were satisfied in talking to legal experts that using the FINRA model, which had already been upheld constitutionally, that HISA would be upheld. And that's precisely what this court ruled, is there's a low bar with respect to the delegation of authority to a delegation of regulation and authority to a private authority overseen by the Federal Trade Commission. And because of that model, the court clearly ruled that although the bar is low, it passes constitutional muster, and there's no reason for the court to interfere. Now, some people are taking from that ruling that the court was troubled by it and says that, you know, if there's going to be any change to this paradigm, it's got to be done by an appellate court. So that leads to, well, do you consider taking an appeal or not? The HBPA indicated that the case now is ripe for appeal. But I have, based on discussions I've had with a number of experts in the past few months, have been satisfied and convinced that this was going to go forward. And the Texas court was probably the best opportunity that the opponents of HISA had to get an adverse or to get a ruling that would enjoin HISA from going forward or ultimately have it declared unconstitutional. So I suspect that, appeal or not, this is going to be upheld. It's going to go into effect. It's going to be pretty difficult to unwind after it does go into effect. But I think the court was clear that based on the FINRA model against which this was measured, it's constitutional.
Well, we'll watch for the next set of legal responses.
The other case is the Kentucky case, moving much slower.
Yeah.
So in the meantime, you know, HISA is very actively beginning to implement all of the necessary requirements to get the program started on July 1 for the safety program, for the registration of covered persons, for bills to the racing commissions, getting the budget approved. And the FTC appears to be easily approving the proposed regulations from the authority to get this program up and going by July 1. And as you know, the anti-doping program will not go into effect until January 1 of 2023. So they're going to get their feet wet and then massage as they go forward. And then obviously, the second big aspect of the authority's jurisdiction, which is the anti-doping program.
All right. Well, we continue to watch for the developments on that front, and we'll see if what else bubbles to the surface. Let's talk some racing, please. And what was this? This was 20 minutes, so I get you can send the bill for, you know, for a third of an hour. Is that the legal?
Steve, I do you pro bono.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It's piled up over the years. Talk about the match series for this year. And in fact, Alan, since we talked, I've had a couple of trainers on that cited and referred to match series for 22 and their excitement at the prospects for some of their runners.
So this is the ninth iteration of the match series, and I have to be, you know, frank with you, it's getting tougher and tougher to hold the series together. Not because the horsemen don't love it, because they do, and they're the impetus for doing this. It's just that the industry continues to evolve. And I know with respect to Delaware and New Jersey, which opted not to participate in the series this year, they're looking at what is best for them during the summer to promote their track cards, their programs, their stakes programs. Delaware has a new track ownership. There are all kinds of challenges that face each of the jurisdictions. And just the notion of, hey, let's all work together. Let's try to coordinate schedules. You know, the series is very popular. It's a challenge to hold it together. And COVID really caused havoc. I mean, we had a fabulous region-wide series put together that would have been run in 2020, and then COVID hit. And for various reasons, in the manner in which COVID has affected or did affect each of the racing jurisdictions, it's been tough to put this back together again. So I take my hat off to, first of all, Colonial Downs. The folks at Colonial Downs had been enormously supportive of the series. They wanted back in. They had been out for a number of years. They wanted back in, and they've been phenomenal partners. And they've always taken the position with Maryland, which is the foundation, as long as you guys want to do it, we want to do it. But I take my hats off to the folks in Pennsylvania. Joe Wilson, Sal DeBunda, Todd Mosteller, Eric Johnson, Chris McElhane, the folks at Parks and Penn for also wanting to participate. So we've got, you know, we're going to do a series that goes from state to state. It's going to be available to all the horsemen in the Mid-Atlantic region and, quite frankly, nationally. And we just, even though we may limit the number of states that are participating, the series gets better each time. So we've got a really good, I think, solid series this year. We've got four divisions. We've got the 3 and up Philly and Mare long turf. So we got turf racing back this year. We got the 3 and up long turf division. We've got the 3 and up Phillies and Mare sprint on dirt, and the 3 and up sprint dirt division. So we've got five races in each division. We will go from track to track. The series will start on April 16th. It'll start next Saturday at Laurel. We'll do the Maryland portion, and then we'll go Pennsylvania. We'll split between Penn Gaming and Parks. We'll then go to Colonial, do some Laurel, and then we will, the championship day will be in October at Parks. And we've spread it out, so it really benefits the horses that stay in the series. They'll get a good rest. They're basically running once a month, once every 4 or 5, 6 weeks. And we think the series is going to be really, really strong this year, just based on early feedback that we're getting, just like you got.
Well, I'm just looking at the schedule, and for those that that haven't ever seen it, or if you haven't been since last, matchseries.com has got all the details and the schedule all laid out there. And next couple of weekends coming up after this at Laurel, and things like the Dahlia for the Phillies and Mares going a mile. That's on the 23rd. You've got the dirt side of things as well. So as early as the Frank Whiteley, actually, for the boys going 7/8 at Laurel on the 16th. So a week from Saturday.
I think, these horses that participate accumulate points as they go through the series. You participate, you get points, you win. Obviously, you get the most points. And it's somewhat like NASCAR or the FedEx Cup, where you earn points based on your performance. And it really gets interesting, and that's why the horsemen really like it. We had fabulous competition last year. It's the only series of its kind in the industry. When I started it back in 1997, it was patterned after the American Championship Racing Series, but we took not just the older horse division, which was the American Championship Series, but we've changed up the divisions, but we're looking for a good regional competition throughout the summer. We're trying to identify the best horses in the region. And when I'm at the track, it does have an appeal. We brand it. There's something different about Match Series races than the regular races on the card. And it really has found a home. As much as it's a struggle sometimes to keep it together, I really love when we get the series going, because the horsemen just love it. And it's for them. It's to give owners who wouldn't participate in Breeders' Cup or Triple Crown or whatever an opportunity to experience the thrill of winning a significant competition. The trainers love it. The jockeys love it. And, it's to promote the sport. It's all it is we're just trying to promote the sport.
Well, and, the bonuses that, that are offered, it's got a nice end of the tunnel reward as well, for everybody. There's a lot of value in this, just the discussion point. I mean, just having having continuity and having a set of races for in a lot of cases, familiar horses, geldings on the male side, and mares that gives them a reason to stick around, through another year, perhaps. So there's lots to like about it. Given some of the fall objectives and the overlap of, the regional breeding programs and things like Maryland Million, there's real equity in this.
Well, they're running for in excess of $2 million in purses, but the bonus pool is $400,000. I mean, there's real money for the owners and trainers who want to stay in the series. I always remember Graham Motion bought his first condo in Florida. You know, he was going to send a division down to Florida. He bought it with, you know, his bonus winnings in the Mets series. Obviously, the past year with the loss of Sam Huff, Sam Huff won the second Mets series. He was a guy who just loved it, promoted it on his radio show. Even if he was talking about football, he was talking about racing. He always talked about the Mets series. And he became a really good friend through that. And, you know, we've had great stories through the years that, you know, it for owners in particular, you know, it's been one of their big memories of being in racing. And so that's what you want to do. You want to give them that opportunity, but you want to try to promote the sport in a way that people will follow it. And, you know, we have a great website, MattSeries.com. And, you know, I invite your listeners to follow the series on our really terrific website.
Alan, I appreciate it. And we'll look forward to next, just the start of a match. And I'm not looking forward to the next legal conversation.
I look forward to seeing you at Old Hilltop in a few weeks.
Exactly.
Which may
right.
become New Hilltop, but we'll see.
Soon enough as well. And another. I did book. I'm right back. I'm right back. I think for like the eighth straight year in Catonsville. I'm all set for the Baltimore run. Looking forward
to seeing you. Maybe we'll have a sit down and we'll go over what's going on here. We'll have some more information for you, I think, by the time you come to Baltimore.
Well, there's two visits that are we never miss in Baltimore. There's Blue, Leon Blushewicz. His visit, which is always well received, somewhat, and or at least highly anticipated, and your visit. So,
well, thank you. I appreciate that,
Alan. Alan Foreman, everybody.
I don't hold a candle to Blue.
Too funny. THA Racing, of course, as well, since we're promoting Alan Foreman entities. And you got plenty of good things happening on that front as well. And MatchSeries.com as well. Alan, thanks so much.
Nice talking to you, Steve. Thank you.
Alan Foreman. And we covered, I think we got everything we needed, right? That was good. All right, we're going to stick with kind of some informational discussion, and Keith Shamblin is going to join us. And I have not had a chance since, where were we? We were at Oaklawn. So I have not spoken to Keith since then. And we touched on it a little bit on Friday with, came up with Nick Tamaro. And by the way, the last three days of the Sam Houston Thoroughbred meet is on the horizon. We'll have conversations, our last visit on that topic with Trey Stiles. And we'll also get Nick, of course, Friday, which will bring us right to the end. So, all right, Keith, maybe he is. Let's see if Keith Shamblin can join us. And I think we've got him. Do we have him now? Keith, good morning. Keith. No, maybe not. Keith? You there? All right. We're going to try him back. All right. Let's get, let's see if we can't, I don't know what was holding him back. There we go. Now I think. There we go. There's Keith Shamblin, and we say good morning, Keith.
How are you?
I'm good. I was mentioning that I had not spoken to you since we were together at Oaklawn, and there's been plenty of news to catch up on.
Hey, it's been a while. It's been a while, but happy to be on this morning.
Well, and I touched on it with Nick Tamaro, the March date for NHC next year. Let's start with that.
Well, we've announced that we're moving the date of the NHC to March 10th through 12th. 2023. We had originally been on Super Bowl Sunday in the second weekend of February. And, of course, when we signed the deal with Caesars and Bally's, that was not Super Bowl Sunday, but they extended the season into another week, and we fell right on top of it. And I know some players were happy about that. Some players, in fact, most of the feedback we got was that that was going to create problems, that Super Bowl Sunday was in many respects a national holiday for sports fans, a lot of parties, a lot of things. And it would create some logistical concerns in Las Vegas, at Bally's, but really all over the city due to the impact of just the crowds, et cetera, coming in. So we talked with our partners at Caesars, and we landed on the March 10th through 12th date, which we think will provide us with better weather for racing around the country, particularly on the East Coast and at Oakland and Tampa and New Orleans, which are important markets, but certainly in Aqueduct and Laurel in the Northeast, even a few weeks can make a big difference. There are no guarantees, but we think it's going to be, it has the potential to be better for, from a weather standpoint. There's great racing that weekend. That's Tampa Bay Derby weekend. They always have a great, card at Tampa on that day, and there's good racing around the country and other jurisdictions, so we're happy about that. It's a good sports weekend, which is becoming more and more prevalent as sports betting grows, and while it's not Super Bowl weekend, it's the NCAA basketball conference tournament weekend, the prelude to March Madness, and so there's terrific basketball tournaments happening from coast to coast involving virtually every college in America. And there's also even a Pac-12 conference tournament taking place right in Las Vegas that weekend. So there's still plenty of sports action on the calendar, and we're looking forward to it. We think it'll be a positive change and extends this year's tour season, or the 2022-2023 tour season, by a couple of weeks. But that's just really what in all likelihood will be a 1-year hiccup, and we anticipate that we'll continue on this date for the foreseeable future, although we haven't agreed to terms going forward. This is just a 1-year contract that's been signed while we continue to work with Caesars and our other partners to find comparable dates going out beyond 2023.
Flesh that out again, actually, Keith. I mean, do you think that we'll be back to the end of January, beginning of February, more typically, or is something like this, is this a possibility, or are you going to play it by, you know, see how it works and go by there?
I think ideally what we'd like to see is ideally would be a landing place on a March date going forward, and but we're not there yet with Caesars. We're not benefiting. The NTRA is not benefiting monetarily one penny from this date move. We're working with our partners to try to adjust the schedule to benefit their property and also benefit our players. In return for moving the date, we would like to see some concessions concessions regarding concessions relating to some of the feedback we received in a survey that we did this year, which was one of the issues that players didn't complain about, but were frustrated about, was the lack of food service on the Thursday during the last chance, first chance contest. We'd like to see that improved upon going forward, so that they have a breakfast, they have a lunch. That contest, I believe, is a $500 entry contest, and we'd like to make it as convenient and as nice as possible for all of the players who participate in that contest. And it has become a very large event on its own, leading into the NHC. So we're working with the host property on things like that. A lot of that in the past has fallen upon the race book to pay for. We feel strongly that a change like this primarily benefits the group events departments and the booking departments for the hotel to open up those rooms on Super Bowl weekend. Probably going to make them a little bit more money. Certainly would in out years. And we don't feel like necessarily that the race book should have to absorb those costs, nor do we feel like we should. So we'll take it one year at a time. We'll continue to work with them, and hopefully we'll get this wrapped up, in the next couple of months. But the key priority for us was a request by them to move off the Super Bowl date. We're more than willing to accommodate that to a new date in March. But we'd like to see the players and the property being the NHC, benefit from that move. So we're working toward that.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about the value added portion for Caesars itself, for Bally's. And I suppose as part of this too, the renovation at Bally's has to, pushing back a couple, couple of months doesn't, they seem like they're, as we left Vegas this year, that they were proceeding on a steady basis of upgrading the property.
We did. That's another fact that went into this decision, was we think the Horseshoe will be further along in its rebranding, of Bally's itself, with a later date change. And as part of that rebranding, there could be definitely renovations to the race book at the new Horseshoe, perhaps even a new location. So, that would be another reason to seek out a later date and move the event from a late January or February date to an earlier or later date in March.
Well, from that standpoint, you bring up a couple of other, sidebar questions and follows, and it's been a couple of weeks, Keith, of always provocative discussion about the value equation involving NHC and the cost structure, and in terms of what the ongoing debate and discussion, any official or unofficial response to some of the things that that have been bandied here the last couple of weeks?
I haven't seen anything. We've discussed about it. It seems like it's kind of the same individuals bringing up the same topic. We are updating our takeout structure. We'll post it online. It'll be there for everybody to see. We're in the process of doing that right now for the most recent year. We continue to offer contests that are as little as $18 in value or in cost. $75 contests on Fridays are doing very well. We've had record participation in some of these contests since the NHC this year, and we're off to a great start, and we'll just continue to tell it like it is and put it out there. And if people, you know, we, as I've said all along, that contests are a great way to participate in our game. And if people want to do, if they want to play in NHC qualifiers, or they want to play in BCBC qualifiers, or they just want to play in other contests, we encourage that, because we think ultimately people are going to want to play to win a trip to Vegas and play for an Eclipse Award and a national championship. And we just want to see growth. We're not looking to take out any more than we have in previous years, and hopefully just continue to improve the event and grow it and do all we can to grow participation in parimutuel wagering. That's our goal. Whether people believe that or want to chatter about it on social media, that's up to them.
Now, and Eric Bialik he put together a series of thoughts, and I'll get Eric to come visit, and because there's a lot of the topics, Keith, that get brought up, really in the wake of every year's contest, it's important to have it out there to, for people to, if it's strictly an opportunity to vent frustrations and things that they would like to see changed, suggest other options, and ways. I think everybody has the same goal, which is, which is to grow it and make it as big and as popular as possible. And, sometimes these discussions, get turned into or perceived as attacks. That's not fair either. I don't, there's nobody that, there might be some that, that just are going to, lash out no matter what occurs, but a lot of it's well intentioned.
Memories are short, and people sometimes forget or want to forget that these last two NHCs are just operated under extraordinarily difficult circumstances due to COVID. Sure. It's amazing. It's just amazing that we were even able to pull the events together in this environment. So, I don't give us a pass, but I'm very thankful of the work by the staff and by the cooperation and participation by horse players in the event and qualifiers themselves leading up to the NHC. Because, when you think back, it wasn't that long ago we held two NHCs within a 6-month period under extraordinarily difficult circumstances due to COVID. And we're really happy to have them behind us. We had great turnout. We had two terrific events, maybe the two best NHCs in the history of the event. And now we're just looking forward and looking forward to a return to normalcy, if we can call it that.
Well, I wanted to get the update on from your perspective and on the date change and how that impacts the players in terms of some other contest news and the landscape. I know that you've been out on the stomp at a number of racetracks and working with organizations. And of course, we had at Arizona in December, we had the seminar presentation trying to encourage some new participation. Anything to report on that front in terms of adding contest venues and
Nothing finalized yet, but we are talking to a number of new venues. We've hoping to have follow up conversations with Oaklawn about adding contests, perhaps as early as this December for the 2023 event. We've made the pitch to them. Tampa Bay is already hosting contests, and even though they weren't members of the NTRA, but they've joined, and they plan on continuing their contests at Tampa. So we're talking to several other tracks, and sales of NHC bursts have been very, very robust, and very much looking forward to another great year and record season. And I think in the near future, we will have some announcements about new venues coming online.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Keith, I appreciate it, and hadn't had a chance, like I mentioned, to touch base. So always worthwhile, and we'll got to get into. And I suppose once the Triple Crown, we get into the lead up to the Triple Crown, that manages to kind of overwhelm the coverage and the topic, but got to start catching up with qualifiers and some of the winners on the weekends as well. I want to get a few guests in, so we'll look forward to that. Keith Shamblin, thank you as always.
Thank you, Steve.
Keith Shamblin, and I want to get Eric, because he's written and spoken eloquently about and passionately about some of the things that players find vexing or irksome, so a worthwhile discussion. If you haven't seen, I'll send the link out for that too. Things about the live money portion, and even Keith kind of hinted at that a little bit. That continues to be the portion of it that it could enhance the contest. But having a workable format, you would think if live money was incorporated, it would change, obviously, the original the foundational basis of what NHC started as. Maybe that's part of the discussion, because it originally, now it's the National Horse Players Championship. It started the original. People have forgotten this. It started as the National Handicapping Championship, and so the mythical $2 win place. And actually, maybe Steve Crist might want to weigh in on this. I don't know if he's thought about it much in recent years, since essentially retiring. But the idea that you were picking win candidates, that the exercise was not necessarily a bankroll building end goal, you know, that in terms of, I mean, in terms of live money anyway, obviously the total of the win place, but that you know, the exercise was the handicapping and, you know, how different is it now, or how different, you know, how much of a difference is there in what we think of as, you know, success as a player. The exercise, the handicapping is wonderful, and you know, the habit and practice and the execution. But the, you know, the bet structuring and the application of the opinion that you form in handicapping, you know, it's a two-part equation. We've talked about this obviously for years, and you know, we spend so much time against the handicapping as opposed to the horse playing side, and there really has been, and I social media is a huge part of this. I would imagine if you had a roundtable conversation, you know, that what tripped, you know, sort of this realization that, you know, handicapping is nice and finding your way to winners and identifying winners, or identifying, you know, the way a race may finish is fine. But if you're not betting successfully, if you're not applying the bankroll successfully to, you know, the opinion. And so it does feel like, you know, the discussion, that it's timely, and you know, it's come up. I mean, I my involvement, I don't know, goes back now 7-8 years, I guess. And I won't pretend to have the same, you know, the same perspective that the contest regulars, that the contest community players have. I mean, I so enjoy, you know, being there and covering it as an event. But you know, one of the discussions that was out there this week was about how much a typical contest player, an NHC participant, spends, you know, pursuing the seat, which is, you know, something. Actually, we haven't talked about that in a while. I mean, we've certainly, you know, certainly asked, you know, various players, you know, how they got, you know, how they qualified and their approach, and you know, there's, you know, as we, I guess, suppose the conversation with Dale Day and a good example, and our friend Jim Sebas, you know, playing in low cost qualifiers, play-ins, you know, the free contests, and you know, trying to basically qualify for really as little investment as is possible. You know, then, you know, if you're a tour, the tour participation is a little different. So I mean, there's all kinds of different parallel tracks, and that's why there's such a diverse set of responses and thoughts on this topic, because everybody approaches it, I think, from a very different perspective, and you know, from a personal, you know, each individually in determining what the value of participation in the tour or participation in just getting a seat and coming to Vegas and, you know, participating, and it, You know, if there's 650 people a year, there's probably 400 different. I'm sure a lot of people have overlap, but there's probably 300 to 400 different mindsets about it. So I kind of just am you know, more of an observer of it than you know, having any definitive opinion about, you know, how it should be structured and whether it's, you know, fair to everybody. And you know, I certainly, you know, I have regularly in those discussions, you know, tried to present the, you know, the NTRA's position in it. I mean, there's you know, there's overhead and, you know, people question, you know, how much the, you know, the value of the seat and what the, you know, what NTRA needs to make the whole thing happen. But as Keith mentioned, we'll see if they've got a new, there sounds like they're going to have a, you know, a new presentation for everybody to consider and respond. But we'll get Eric. He's been on. It's been a while actually since it, because he thinks about this a lot and he puts a lot of effort in. He had a nice piece addressing a lot of, you know, the issues that come up every year. That's it in the money, and we'll get Eric's. I'll send that link out so you can read it if you haven't seen it. Let's take a break here. Case, top of hour three. Andy Serling going to join us. We'll get Andy in. And Wood Memorial Week on the horizon, of course. Tomorrow, they'll draw. And got a pretty good idea of how the fields are shaping up. And they're quite good. Now we just need a decent day weather-wise. And turf racing looks like it's under threat for Thursday, Friday. We'll see. Downstate, but anyway, let's take the break. Andy Serling joins us. We'll get his thoughts about everything else that we saw over the weekend with Andy. Back after this.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and currently stands the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 mile training